Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Good to have you here, Henrik with Red Ice TV. It's always a pleasure being able to connect with you. Hope you're doing well. Had a good weekend, of course. We're here today with none other than a legend, Jared Taylor. We're going to dive into some of the recent topics that have been, well, of course, not only the lockdown and some of the things that's happening in regards to free speech, but take a little bit of a deeper look at Ahmaud Arbery a bit later, too, try to figure out what happened there. We had a similar case with a beating that took place, unfortunately, at a Detroit hospice, a care home for the elderly. It was an older white gentleman that was beaten. And kind of compare the two videos, the different reactions, of course, in the media. We also had Memorial Day in the U.S., and New York Times went after, as they always do, of course, military structure, everything is white supremacy kind of thing. So those are some of the items we're going to churn out here today. But, of course, Jared Taylor, I think he needs a very great introduction in the sense that everybody knows him. I hope you know him. He's been doing fantastic work. He's a legend in the field when it comes to trying to remedy the, the crisis within the European family when it comes to identity of Europeans, white identity, and he's done tremendous work on this front. So, Jared, welcome back to Red Ice. It's great to have you here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be back, and thank you for that excessively kind introduction.
Oh, no worries. You deserve it.
You yourself are increasingly a legend, you know. You're doing wonderful work for our European family, and I'm always grateful for what you and Lana have been doing over the years.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very, very much. It's good to see you again. It was a while ago. I forget when we had you back or when we had you on the show last time, but tell us about, again, I don't know how supportive you've been of our great leadership when it comes to this this lockdown business. It should be pointed out, though, it's actually the first time, I believe, in history that the healthy population have actually been quarantined and mandatory housing, as you can call it, what it will. It's been different stringent measures in different states, so it hasn't been across the board. But generally, how have things been for you under this lockdown?
Well, the fact is, I work at home, and even in normal circumstances, I consider it a wonderful and successful week if I don't have to leave my basement. So for me, confinement has been my routine. Very, very occasionally, there are things I like to go out and do. But things you can do outdoors, for example, on Memorial Day, I went kayaking on a little pond, and I didn't feel the least bit endangered. So really, life is very different for me. I'm sorry, it's hardly different for me. And one of the senses that I'd had, at least when it first started, we were reading about all of these rising cases of disease and death. I felt as if I were almost in the United States during the Second World War, living out in the countryside, and where life really went on quite normal. People continued to grow their crops and tend to their livestock, whereas they'd read in the newspaper about all these horrific sea battles and land battles that weren't affecting them at all. That's almost the way I felt. It's a kind of sense of irreality. And I don't know anyone myself who has been diagnosed with this COVID disease. And I do marvel at the timidity and tameness with which Americans, who were supposed to be these freedom-loving, rugged individualists, have been told to stay at home, and all of them practically meekly stay at home. Well, except for blacks who wish to get block parties thousands at a time and shoot each other. But white people, for the most part, have done what they're told. It's really astonishing, this level of sheep-like behavior.
Yeah, it was. It didn't take much. I was surprised to see how. I mean, we have seen some protests. We have seen some protests. Yes. There have been kind of a, well, maybe not everybody was a MAGA Trump flag waving individual, but many of them were, and they did speak up against it. They thought that the measures were too stringent. And again, depending on what state you looked at, there was a very different reactions. Whitmer in Michigan was, of course, one of the more stringent one, where, for example, she banned people from being able to buy seeds, for example, and tend to their garden and things like that. People couldn't go to their summer houses, although actually just the other day she was her car herself was actually photographed at her summer place in Michigan. So it's one rule for them, right, and another for us, the police.
But don't forget, it was a self-driving car. She was
okay. Well, there you go.
The protest that first took place there was reported in just the most tendentious and cynical way. As you'll recall, people were complaining about the demonstrators waving swastikas.
That's right.
Well, of course, the swastikas were a representation of the totalitarian policies of the governor. They weren't celebrating Nazism at all. They were used as an insult, not as a celebration. But Time magazine and all the rest of them were saying, oh, you had people out there waving swastikas and rebel flags. I saw one one rebel flag that was attached to some sort of billboard. It was some kind of message, and I'm not even sure what the message was. And other reports were of nooses. I didn't see a single case of a noose. And we can be absolutely assured that if somebody's waving a noose around, it would have been photographed 50 times. So the reporting on this was completely, completely wrong and disgusting. I think even more so than is generally the case with the mainstream media. But I would add that I think it is very stupid for people who are demonstrating against some kind of government measure to swagger around with AR-15s and Colt 45s on their hips. That just makes them look wild and potentially violent. This wasn't a demonstration about arms control, for example.
No.
Under those circumstances, you might make a point of displaying a legally owned and legally displayed weapon. But then to walk around with these, and it was a small number, but of course, all of the TV cameras are going to come rushing in and find the five guys who've got AR-15s. I think that was a very stupid thing on their part.
No, I agree. Obviously, it was lawful. They had the right to do it and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't out of bounds in that way. But but I get your point. It was about one thing that's why people question if some of these. We've seen it in the past. I don't want to get too conspiratorial here, but one person shows up with according to the media, the right sign or something, right? And that's what gets the photo up, and then that's what at the front pages and all the papers, and hence they can be guilt by association, lump everybody into that one individual, right, that showed up with the wrong thing.
Well, what was particularly despicable was the talk about the swastikas. And as I say, the swastikas were to insult. They were used to compare Governor Whitmer to Adolf Hitler. They weren't a celebration of Hitler at all. They were using the swastikas. We just say, look, we will not submit to this kind of tyranny. And then to say they were these demonstrators walking around with swastikas as if they were SS troops or something. Just disgusting, absolutely disgusting. But this sort of thing the press gets away with, and nobody ever calls them on them, except for people like us. So.
That's right. So Tucker had a good segment on this, too, to expand on this a little bit, that we have a lot of other things that have been lost, essentially, using the coronavirus pandemic as an excuse, I think, to actually clamp down on taking people's rights away and things like that. We've seen a lot of big tech censorship in the wake of this, too. Not only YouTube, but Facebook and Twitter now have started to enforce things, which I think most of them took this position that if we have opinions that are voiced on social media that contradicts the World Health Organization, they will take it down. At least YouTube, I know, officially took that stance. But the ironic thing about that situation is that the World Health Organization themselves have flip-flopped on a number of issues throughout this whole pandemic. In the beginning, it was, no, don't close the borders. There's no point in wearing masks, et cetera. And then they went the other way, right? You'd think when there's so much uncertainty, that would be a time more important than ever to actually have different views and dissenting views about this.
Yes, and ultimately, we should all feel deeply insulted by these efforts to snuff out a dissenting point of view. Now, you and I have been dissenters for a long time, and we have been targets of many, many efforts to silence us by people who would rather silence us than try to refute us. But I see this now extending to people who are opposed to vaccinations, people who have unauthorized or dissident views on this COVID virus. And as you point out, much of the science on COVID is entirely unsettled. And it is perfectly legitimate to have different points of view. But the great insult, of course, is to say, well, okay, we know what's best. We know what's right. And we don't trust you. We don't trust you to make up your own mind. You would think that even liberals, if they're honest, would be deeply insulted by this. And if, for example, some of the things that have been done about the COVID-19, there was this famous plandemic video that I believe you've spoken about earlier in previous episodes. If that's so wrong and stupid, let people make up their own minds. It's just so offensive to be told, well, we've checked into both sides. We've decided that it's X rather than Y. And we're not even going to give you a chance to look into the Y argument. And to me, Anyone with any sense of intellectual fair play should be radically opposed to this, especially people who are conservatives and who should realize that they're next in line. After we get silenced, anyone who has any dissident view on anything having to do with sex roles or race relations or even history is likely to be snuffed out too.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And of course, those are the kind of things that we, especially on this show, have been warning about, that it's like, sure, you might agree now. You might not care about, for example, the replacement agenda that's ongoing, or the open borders, or the consequences of this, and the, you know, the courage it takes to speak out about those things in an environment which is so suppressive, right? These are people that not only throw you off social media, they ban you from payment gateways and financial services, for example, yes, just for speaking out about this. But now we see rapidly, Jared, this moved to COVID-19 as well. Soon as there's any kind of contradictory info, that's it, you're banned. I think even David Icke was a highly controversial conspiracy theorist, if that's a description you want to use for him. But regardless, he should have the right to talk about the things he wants to talk about. And he was banned, I think, the latest now from PayPal. His YouTube and Facebook, was kicked off of that within 48 hours after pressure from mainstream media.
Right? Yes, it's just incredible. To me, one of the most terrifying things that's happened in the last few years was Daily Stormer, Andrew Anglin. You can like him, you can love him. I would disagree with him on many points, but he lost his website, for heaven's sake. So far, our URLs are the one sacred place, our one haven for the rest of us. I've not heard of anyone actually losing a URL. Maybe 8chan was taken down by its owners. But somebody decides, this guy is so bad, we are going to try to kick him entirely off the internet. Now, he's found ways to creep back onto the internet. But this idea that this is so bad that not even access to the internet. Somebody wants to send us back to the, you know, to the 20th century in terms of trying to get your word out. And also this fellow that runs Cloudflare. Cloudflare is almost an essential service. It protects websites from denial of service attacks, which, by the way, is a felony to try to shut down a website by means of denial of service. Well, there was an acting director of Homeland Affairs appointed by, of all people, Donald Trump, who in a seminar encouraged Cloudflare to withdraw its services from so-called hate groups. That would be you, that would be me, that would be all sorts of people that we know and like and respect. And to have a government official saying, okay, you have this essential service that protects people from a felony assault. Why don't you just withdraw that service? You're a private company. You can do whatever you like. That's like asking the police to say, okay, this Henry Palmer, he's a bad guy. We have heard about this plot to burgle his home or maybe attack his wife. Well, hey, you police, stand down. Just let this happen. This is absolutely preposterous and disgusting. And this, again, is a Donald Trump appointee who's doing that. I wish I could remember his name, sort of a Norwegian or Scandinavian name. But this actually get people standing up in public and encouraging private companies to withdraw their services so that criminals, people who are committing a felony, can shut down your website. This, it takes your breath away. The Stasi, the Gestapo, this would have been tactics they would have adored.
It's amazing how fast it's gone, right? And I think in Tucker, the segment he did, he basically said Americans enjoyed freedom of speech for, what was like 250 years or something, I forget the exact number, but then it's like, it's gone. That's it. It's out the window now. And Americans have now lost it. And he pointed that out too. I mean, people from around the world, and I'm not also just, you know, talking about people from third world countries. I'm talking about people from Europe and Australia, New Zealand and stuff like that, that have fled to America to take part in the ability to voice their opinions and stuff. Like suppressive governments from other parts of the world in the Western world, that people have come to America to be able to voice their opinions, and now it is no more. It's gone.
Well, of course, one of the ironies too is that you have companies like Facebook or Twitter or YouTube that are enforcing their policies all around the world. Dissidents everywhere, dissidents in Europe, dissidents in South America. All of a sudden, there is an American private company that decides, no, you can't say these things. And this is happening practically without a murmur of opposition. And Donald Trump makes a whole lot of noise about how bad this is. But so far as I know, the only thing he's ever said is, well, you've just got to be good. You've got to be better. As if you and me expressing our ideas more eloquently is going to protect us from this kind of treatment. It seems to me the more eloquently we speak, the more likely we're going to be considered dangerous and thrown off.
Yeah.
And so a guy who doesn't seem to realize that all these people who are being kicked off of Twitter, kicked off of Facebook, and all these social media platforms, many of them would have drummed up support for him. He doesn't seem to care. And it is astonishing to think that I think it was no more than three or four maybe at most 5 years ago, that Twitter was describing itself as the free speech wing of the free speech movement.
That was a joke. did you hear him actually said that? Jack Dorsey afterwards said, no, that was just a joke.
He said I never heard that. Yeah, I don't believe that.
I have the clip, actually. I'll see if we can cue it up later.
Wait, now he's claiming that it was a joke?
Yep.
Well, there's one thing that is not a
joke. It turned into a joke, right?
What's that?
Twitter's free speech did turn into a joke. That we can say.
Yes, it did. But there was undoubtedly the case that Amazon, back in 2015, it came under pressure to stop selling a book that was essentially a pederast's guide for seducing young boys. And their view at that time was, no, this is a slippery slope. We may despise the content of this book, but once we decide what is good and what is bad, then there is no end to it, and we don't want to get into this game. Well, they did fold shortly after taking that stand. But that was only back in 2000. That was only 5 years ago. They were defending a predator's guide for pederasty. Well, golly, most of my books are gone. Countercurrents books are gone. I don't know if you're a fan of Ragnar Redbeard, but
yes.
Ragnar Redbeard
yeah.
is gone. It's yep. written 150 years ago, for heaven's sake.
Yep.
And that, it's just too provocative. We can't have that up.
It's book burning. And think about it. All of this has been digitized. Amazon has become the number one book outlet. And I mean, it's kind of a symbolic, more esoteric kind of way of looking at it. But think about it. Their very pad, which they sold to people, are actually called the Kindle. Right, they have their other product line is called Fire, the Fire Stick TV and stuff. It's like these are book burners now. They are.
I mean. Well, I suppose at the time they had the idea. Well, you can burn all your books because it's all going to be digital.
Right,
but,
right.
No, they really are. They're burning digital copies as well as paper copies these days. No, it's absolutely despicable.
Here's that clip, and it's part of another compilation, and it's music and stuff behind it, but the point stays. Let me cue this up here, and let's listen to this. Here's Jack Dorsey coming up talking about that this was a joke. Here we go.
You have no place on our platform.
Well, in the last quarter, we've actually removed nearly 3 million posts for containing hate speech.
Quote around free speech wing of the free speech party was never a mission of the company. It was a joke.
There you go. There it is. Did you hear that?
I had never heard that. But now Dorsey was not running the show at that time. He came in later.
He was part of it first. Then he jumped out, and then he came back again as the CEO. I don't know when that was. Yeah.
Yes. Well, good grief. I see. So free speech, that's just a joke. Well,
yes,
at least
he's
being honest about it.
Right. It is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Well, what else can you say about it, really? It's been it's a narrowing corridor, right, of opinions, which is now they've finally snuffed up the kind of the more controversial areas. Actually, there's one thing I wanted to show you as well, and it harkens back to, like, I'd say the one of the first topics then that they really clamped down on, which was, of course, white advocacy, or, again, people are concerned with open borders and stuff like that. And I don't know if you've ever saw this. Again, this is actually part of another compilation. I tried to find the article and I couldn't, but in this article here, it's a House Resolution 41 called Rejecting White Nationalism and White Supremacy. Let me see if I can pull this up here real quick. This was interesting because on this website, they're trying to define, I pulled that up a little bit here, they're trying to define what it is, right, to be a so-called white supremacist or a white nationalist. Now, they use these terms interchangeably, although I would argue they do mean specifically two different things. In this House resolution, they have this line right here. To be a white nationalist is to be pro-white. In other words, they kind of corner you on this issue, which I thought was kind of fascinating. I'm going to get your take on that quickly before we move on to some other topics here. But that basically means that if you are, unless you are anti-white, Jared, you will be considered to be pro-white, which is then means that you will be seen as a white supremacist.
Well, you could be, I think it would be acceptable if you could say that you are colorblind. You don't see race. Race makes no difference to you. And you'd be perfectly happy for your children to marry people of any race. I think if you insisted that you're neither pro-white nor anti-white, that would be okay. But what is obviously a double standard here is that black people can be pro-black. Koreans can be pro-Korean. Everyone understands this, absolutely everyone. So it's only whites who are not allowed to take their own side in an argument is what it boils down to. I'd never seen that particular definition, but it is an eye-opening one.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is perfectly consistent with the conniption that people get into if you just put up a sign that says it's okay to be white.
Yeah.
Not even that you're pro-white, but that it's not bad to be white. And I'm sure you've talked about this many times on your program, but when people get furious at the idea of someone saying it's okay to be white, it's very clear that in their view, it's not okay to
be white. That's right. Yep.
Yes. So where will this end? I think that more and more white people, I mean, we get people writing to us all the time. We get people reacting to our videos, reacting to our podcasts, coming and commenting on more and more reactions all the time of people who see through this, who are furious about it, who are very upset about it. But I can imagine sort of, it's like two tectonic plates moving against each other. All of the forces of society, the mainstream institutions of society, they're moving in one way. And then other people are reacting in a completely different way. And as you know, when you have tectonic plates that meet and slide against each other, you get earthquakes. What form this earthquake will take, I do not know. But the United States has never been so divided since the years leading up to the Civil War. Now, I'm not one of those who think that there's going to be a shooting war of the kind that we had that started back in 1860, 1861. But I really do see tremendous conflict ahead in this country.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. I don't want that. That's what people like me, and I would assume you as well, have been kind of trying to warn about, that this is turning into a really bad situation. We don't want this. We don't want this for our children. And think about it. I mean, they're becoming a hated and resented minority eventually. Yes. Because of this. The pressure is so high in the media, and it never ends. We'll take a look at those New York Times articles in a little bit, too, on Memorial Day, right? But let's talk about this one real quick. The remains of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife will be removed from a Memphis park now. It will never end. The attacks on our history. I remember a video, one of the first ones I think I watched by you and Amron way, way, way back, and you were talking about the situation in South Africa, I think it was, regarding schools being renamed and airports and streets and stuff. And eventually, yeah. Eventually it will, well, let's face it, it will not only be the dead people and those that are have been dead for 250 years. People like us who are alive will be removed out of the equation eventually, if they can get their way, I would assume. So.
Yes, yes. Remove the dead along with the living. What happened, of course, in Forest Park was really quite despicable. The photograph here shows the statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest that used to be there. It's not there anymore, as you know. The park was publicly held land, and there was a law in Tennessee according to which you could not remove monuments from publicly held land. Well, the city of Memphis, which is run by blacks, got around this by selling this downtown park property that's probably worth millions of dollars. They sold it, I believe, to $1,000 to some private company that was set up specifically for the purpose. And then once it was allegedly in private hands, they took the statue down. It was an obvious and fraudulent end run around the law. But at that point, they were not going to remove the bodies of the general and his wife. And now, because, well, they were there interred along with the statue. So now they're going to haul them away. So even the idea of dead Confederates under the ground, rotting away, even that is just too much for the people of Memphis, Tennessee. No, the extraordinary hatred for the Confederacy is something that never fails to astonish me. As you probably know, the men that the Confederates were actually trying to kill, Yankee soldiers, very soon forgave them, if you wish. There were all kinds of meetings between the blue and the gray. And I recall, I believe it was the 50th anniversary of Pickett's Charge. They had Confederate veterans that marched up the ridge and Yankee veterans who were behind. And then they met and they embraced each other and they broke into tears. There was a real respect and a camaraderie. And Memorial Day first started off as Decoration Day. Decoration Day was a day in which people would put flowers on the graves of their Civil War dead, North and South. And there was a sense of trying to reconcile the country after this war. There was considerable respect all around the country for the best generals of the Confederacy, Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson. But now, the further we get from the actual killing, the more hatred there is for the Confederacy. It is an absolutely sick phenomenon. Ordinarily, as a conflict recedes in time, the bitterness goes away. But in this case, the bitterness mounts and mounts and mounts. And the absolute hatred for anything having to do with the Confederacy is just astonishing. And this is especially surprising among people who pride themselves on tolerance, on diversity. For heaven's sake, they're the most intolerant and hateful people in America, and they accuse us of being haters. It is simply breathtaking.
And of course, you know, for now they say, well, it's only these guys because they were in the Ku Klux. They bad, right? They bad men and stuff like that. But we know that this, it will not end there. It will be, then it will be Lincoln and then Robert, you know, John Kennedy, right? It will be like, it will never end, I believe, anyway. They would just continue as long as they're white.
There have been some removals. Justice Taney, who had a statue in Baltimore, he was hauled away because he wrote some decisions that were considered insulting to blacks. He wasn't a Confederate. He wasn't a Confederate at all. And then there was a statue of Stephen Foster, the songwriter. That had to be taken away. And do you know, in the early days, in front of the U.S. Capitol building, there was a statue of Columbus discovering America. And next to him was an American Indian. Well, the American Indian was on one knee, as I recall, and this was considered insulting to the Indian. So back in the 50s, that was removed. Columbus himself was a bad guy. And as I'm sure you know, all around the country on Columbus Day, monuments to Columbus are defaced, destroyed, and the move on is, of course, to not celebrate Columbus Day, to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. The theory, of course, is that if Columbus was a bad guy, none of us Europeans has the right to be here, that this is an absolute catastrophe. So, and then, of course, if you're going to say, well, the Confederates are bad because they were rebels and they were slaveholders, and this is the theme of one of the articles that we may talk about later, it was in New York Times. If they were rebels and they were traitors and they were slaveholders, well, what about the founding fathers? They were rebels and traitors against the crown. They too were slaveholders. If you're going to tear down statues to somebody like Nathan Bedford Forrest or Robert E. Lee, then surely you've got to take Washington's name off the Capitol and Jefferson and every last one of them. I believe, seven out of nine presidents of the United States are slaveholders. You have to repudiate everything that has ever happened in American history. And basically you're repudiating all white people, because the theory now, of course, is that we are inherently racist simply by breathing the air, and only we can be racist.
Why we make the air worse for non-white people, in fact, and we're forcing them to breathe in more of the talk. You saw the article, right? The Guardian, way back a couple of months ago. And I mean, this, however ridiculous this is, these are actually the things that they managed to push on most people, and they believe it, right? It's horrendous.
You know, I wonder to what extent they believe it. How many white people really do believe that every white person, every Skid Row bum, every white man with an IQ of 80, everyone who is poor or struggling, or somebody that works two minimum wage jobs to try to get his daughter through school, are these people really beneficiaries of some kind of white privilege? Do they genuinely believe that? Then the other question I have about white privilege, and this is one that I would love to actually ask one of the proponents of white privilege, is, well, surely if America were still all white, if we were all white, then there'd be no white privilege, right? There cannot be white privilege unless there are non-whites in the country. Well, does this mean that all of a sudden we are much better off? We're much more likely to get rich. We're much more likely to win a beauty contest. We're much more likely to get the corner office because there are non-whites living in the country, that this somehow improved America? The whole idea is preposterous, utterly, utterly preposterous. And to me, any society that comes up with a term like white privilege, which is supposed to designate unearned privilege by the people who everyone is free to show the greatest contempt for, such a society does not have white privilege. Such a society, in fact, and there is license to despise white people and only white people. You cannot have white supremacy in a society where there is a general view that somehow white people have undeserved privilege. This is absolute nonsense. And the idea that every single white person, every garbage man, every bus driver is waking up and beavering away, somehow implicitly supporting white supremacy, This is preposterous. How would they even begin to do something like that?
Why don't we dive into this? I didn't read it yet. You brought it to my attention.
Yes.
New York Times piece, opinion piece here. Why does the U.S. military celebrate white supremacy? Tell us about this article.
Well, it really boils down to something that the New York Times has been pounding away at for years now. The ridiculous and horrible shame of the fact that there are 10, count them, 10 military installations in the United States that are named after Confederate generals. There are over 400 military installations, as I mentioned earlier. And the fact that you've got 10 that are named for Confederates, oh my gosh, this is a miserable, miserable thing. This very editorial, and by the way, it's not an op-ed piece by some hopped-up black person or some hopped-up lesbian. This is the representative view of the editorial board.
Yeah.
This is the United States paper of record speaking in its official voice saying, the mere fact that we have bases named after Confederates, such as Robert E. Lee or Pickett, who led Pickett's charge, this is promoting white supremacy. This is just completely cuckoo stuff. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they make the point that these were racist traitors. Well, so was George Washington. George Washington happened to have won his victory. And in the case of the Confederates, my ancestors were almost exclusively Confederate, by the way. So my ancestors fought two revolutions, once against Britain, and we succeeded that time, once to break away and free the South, that failed. But one set of my ancestors are heroes, the other set are demons because they failed, which is what it boils down to. In any case, both of the leaders of both of those the leaders of both revolutions were certainly frothing and insane white supremacists by today's standards, but the Confederates are held in just special, special ill repute. This was a particularly hateful and loathing editorial. The way they talked about Confederates, it's just sickening. People who claim to be, as I say, so tolerant and accuse us of being haters. Oh, boy, they just have no idea.
And of course, the message, too, right, is they kind of pile this onto the U.S. military as a whole as well at the top of it. Look at the graphic they use here, too, right? It's a it's a bullet, which is, I would assume, some kind of KKK hood or something.
Yes. this is some kind of artillery shell, I would guess.
Oh, man.
And they're trying to make it look like a KKK hood. This is just – It's extraordinary. And as you probably know, ever since the military was integrated in, I believe it was 48 or 49, 1948, I believe, by Harry Truman, by executive order, the United States military has been aggressively egalitarian. It's the place where when you ever say multiracialism can be made to work in the United States, people always point to the military. And, of course, there are all sorts of racial tensions within that organization. But the idea that there's some kind of that the United States Army is promoting white supremacy, just the breathtaking lunacy of this. You know, where can you even begin to describe this kind of craziness?
And again, this is the gold standard of journalism in the West, right? New York Times.
Really? I mean, I think more and more people, in fact, there's another article in New York Times that we mentioned. I'm not sure if you can bring that one up, but it came out on Memorial Day itself. Here, this is Memorial Day weekend. We're supposed to be celebrating the dead who fought for the United States. And what does the New York Times publish? This op-ed, this editorial statement saying that all those soldiers, in effect, they're saying all those soldiers that were dead, they were white supremacists. They were all evil people, Confederates, Northerners alike. And then there's another article that came out just yesterday on Memorial Day itself. I believe that was the Friday or the Saturday. And it was the Saturday before Memorial Day, the one that you just showed us. On Memorial Day itself, it's an article by a black woman who is moaning and groaning and lamenting over the fact that the top officer ranks in the United States, in all the branches of the service, are not only white, they're all men. And this is shameful. This is disgusting. This is proof of racism. Boy, oh boy. Again, where do you begin on this stuff? At one point, the author does concede that whites and certainly blacks go into the service for different reasons. Many whites want to go into the combat arms. into infantry, into artillery, into actual fighting regiments, because that's what they want to do. They want to fight and defend their country, for better or for worse. Whereas many blacks go in to learn a profession. They want to learn how to be an accountant or a truck mechanic or a radio operator or something like that. They did very, very briefly concede this. And it's in combat arms, that's how you get to the top in the military. But aside from two sentences along those lines, every bit of it is racism, racism, racism. And if you talk to people who are actually serving now, the level of racial preferences in all branches of the service is just jaw-dropping. Yes. This is something that no one would ever dare talk about. I keep begging the contacts I have in the military to write about their actual experiences. Only once or twice has someone who's retired from the military actually been willing to do so. But anybody inside now who's seeing what the current circumstances are, they're just too afraid it might come back to them. And of course, they would just be busted in an instant if they said anything at all to suggest that, no, blacks are not targets of some kind of discrimination. They're pushed forward in the most remarkable way. If you say this, that's career suicide. It would be like saying that no, women aren't as qualified for the special forces as men. That's career suicide too.
It's interesting you mentioned this, that the military is used as an example of like why multiracial, multi-ethnic societies would work.
Yes.
But obviously a military, I forget what the terms are here, but they're not, military men are not free, women, right? That they have to seek liberty in these kinds of, it's indicative of the fact that you're living in a very rigid structure overall. Obviously you're highly regimented in this environment, yes. Which is of course I've seen some other societies have been, is it Singapore or something? But the same thing there. Essentially, you'll have to have a kind of a police state in place for some kind of multicultural society to work on the surface, at least, right?
Henrik, that's a very, very good point. And not enough people make it. The military is the most regimented place in the entire country. And when people point to this as some kind of great success of race relations, they're really talking about something that is not at all natural, not the kind of thing that you can extend to society at large. Furthermore, there is in the Army a cutoff of 85 IQ. I mean, it shifts according to the demands of the service. But what that means is if you score below 85, then you can't be a soldier. Well, what that does is eliminate half the black population, for heaven's sake. So that's also an aspect of it, too. You just don't get the kind of ghetto thugs, or at least they try not to get them. But so that, too, is an artificial element of the military situation, besides which it is by no means this utterly smooth-sailing place. The officer corps is white, by and large, because they do really concern themselves with quality to the extent they can. When they're forced, they will advance people, because you just can't have these pale male people running the show. But the people who are in it, the people who are seeing it now, believe me, when they have a chance to talk to you, they will really open your eyes in terms of just the remarkable kinds of effort that go into promoting any minimally competent black person, particularly.
If you can briefly just describe to us what you think will happen when, as whites become a smaller and shrinking minority. Let's just talk about the U.S. for now. What will we see? What are the effects of this?
Well, alas, ordinarily, it's very difficult to predict what the future will be like. But in the case of the United States, we see countries that have gone from, if not necessarily white majority, from a kind of white dominance to white subservience. And the most obvious example of this is South Africa. South Africa, whites are still hanging on. They're still whites who can live under reasonably comfortable circumstances, but mostly they have to live in gated communities. I believe that white society in South Africa, the days are numbered. Eventually, it's going to be like Zimbabwe. And whites will be streaming out of South Africa, really just basically with the clothes on their back. And when that time comes, there'll be a big debate in the United States. And the debate is going to go like this. Well, these people are being persecuted. Should we take them in? But the majority voicing them is saying, no, these people are racist. If they are suffering now, they're only getting what they deserve. And right now, the racial preferences in South Africa are that they make ours look tame. And the wholesale renaming of streets, of schools, taking down monuments. Cecil Rhodes is a good example. All of the old Afrikaner, the Afrikaner heroes, those people are just being rubbed out of the history books. To me, what happened in South Africa, especially to the Afrikaners were betrayed by the English whites who were really running the show. Afrikaner society, it had a history, it had a culture, it had a kind of mythology. This sort of pioneer, the Voortrekkers, the Battle of Blood River, the oath that they took before the battle, all of these things were very stirring. They were part of the founding myth and the founding reality in the history of South Africa. This was a genuine nation with its own cuisine, its own approach to Christianity, and it was absolutely strangled in its crib by an international community that refused to accept its legitimacy. Now, you can certainly fault the South Africans. I think that when they started doing grand apartheid, the idea there was they were going to carve the country up into white areas and black areas. Well, they should have been more generous. They should have given more land to the black areas. And if they had done that, it's perhaps not impossible that they could have preserved part of South Africa that was theirs and theirs alone. Now they are under the boot of blacks. And as you know, there are these small communities such as Orania, which is exclusively Afrikaner, but that just survives absolutely at the whim and at the mercy of the ANC government. Who knows how long that will last? So I believe that the future of the United States goes in the direction of South Africa. It will probably not be as bad as South Africa, and with all its high crime rates, it's just corruption, police brutality. It will not be as bad because the non-whites become majority of the United States. Many of them will be Hispanics. Many of them will be Asians. We'll have Muslims. We'll have this mass, this mix of all sorts of non-whites. But those people will not create a society that is as virulently anti-white as what we find in South Africa, but it will certainly be one which has the greatest contempt for us. And as you said earlier, the idea of leaving to our children and our grandchildren a nation in which they are not just a minority, but a hated and despised minority. This really is a terrifying thing. And I think more and more whites are waking up to this awful destiny that we're leaving to our children.
Yeah, well said. And I want to underline this, too. I mean, most of the people, but I want to address, you know, there's always potential newcomers that come in. It's good to go over some of these things again. Now, here's one article that I'm showing from it's the Brookings Institute here, their publication. They're saying the U.S. will become minority white in 2040, census projects. I had another couple of these headlines, too. Let me pull these up real quick here. Because we hear, of course, that these are, and I'll show the Wikipedia entry in a moment here, but these are conspiracy theories, we've been told.
This
is not really happening, right? They're trying to gaslight us. Here's one in regards to the UK specifically, but independent white Britons will be a minority before 2070, says Professor. And here maybe the most eye-opening one, The Guardian again says, the last days of a white world. And they go on to write here, let me read this past paragraph right here. It says, we are near a global watershed, a time when white people will not be the majority in the developed world. They're talking about the Western world, right, where Europeans live, the countries we founded, Britain included. Anglo-Saxon whites are already a minority in Hawaii and the District of Columbia. Now they are an ethnic minority in the country's most populous state and one of the most the one most usually identified with the American dream, right? So they're talking about a watershed moment that we're going to become a minority. And then if you go to Wikipedia and you search on this, now they've actually changed this up a little bit because it used to be, I think it was either population replacement and then they had conspiracy theory within parentheses, or it was possibly the great replacement and then the conspiracy theory. But they shifted that, right? So the great replacement, they write about what it is, but they still debunk it as not really happening. Now they've changed it to that it's only just the white genocide conspiracy theory. They've updated this a little bit here. But they're trying to gaslight us into thinking that this is not really happening, Jared.
You know, I hadn't seen that shift because the last time I looked, which is no more than a few weeks ago, if you actually searched, if you did a Google, if you do a Google search If you can do that online right now, if you do a Google search for the Great Replacement, I believe you get a warning that says that this is a conspiracy theory before you even get to any of the results. That has been
spelled wrong.
Let's see. Well, no, look at that. They've given up on that. Well.
Interesting. All right.
Up until quite recently, if you were to search, they would give you a little window, and it said this is a conspiracy theory. So
right.
on the one hand, if you see the way it seems to frame itself is that when non-whites are talking about how the world is going to change as we disappear, and they're celebrating this. For example, there was a Washington Post article of maybe 2 or 3 years ago talking about gun control. It said, don't worry, the NRA is going to fall. That was its words, because the population is changing. And it's only whites who care about the Second Amendment. And so as non-whites are replaced, then the politics of gun control will change and we'll have all these nice gun control laws that we've always wanted all along. So they're saying, yes, it's changing and it's going to change in wonderful ways. Now, if we look at those changes and say, well, no, we don't think it's wonderful. We see the change and we oppose the change. Then that's a conspiracy theory, or at least that was the way it was in Google until just recently. It's quite interesting that they seem to have changed that. I suppose the blatant contradiction of our describing exactly the same thing that others are celebrating and then saying that we're seeing things somehow. I guess the contradiction of that would just got too much for them.
Let me pull this clip in. This is a classic. I've showed it a couple of times. It's good to show these because it really awakens people to the reality of the situation, and also the blatant kind of contradiction of advocates who on one hand say that this is white supremacy and things like that, but then on the other hand admit it. Look at this clip as an example.
It is like the Great Replacement, which is the perfect marriage, really, between Islamophobic racism, anti-Semitism, and white nationalism, because the theory goes that there is a sort of Zionist conspiracy to breed out white people. The white British population has decreased by 600,000, while the minority population has increased by 1.2 million. So, yes, lads, we're winning.
There you go. Right. So everybody's an anti-white advocate, right, in that sense. But then they admit that, like, we're winning in London because they're becoming a minority there.
Right? That's right. Yeah. That's right. They celebrate it. They celebrate it nonstop. It's just absolutely shameless. Now, I do not. Well, you could describe what's happening to whites by the technical term of genocide, according to certain definitions in the UN treaties. Any measures that does reduce the numbers of a population, and in fact, if you have non-white immigration, massive non-white immigration to white countries, you could argue that that meets the technical definition of genocide. However, I really don't think that there are many people who are spitting on their heads and rubbing them together and rolling up their sleeves saying, okay, we're going to reduce white people to minorities in their own country. The natural force of population movements has that effect because whites have built desirable societies. That's all it takes. And non-whites come from societies that are failed. Their ancestors could not make attractive societies. They want to come pushing in and live with us because they know they'll be much better off. Now, once they're here, like this woman that you quote, some of them are celebrating the fact that we're winning, as she says. But I don't think that there is a conspiracy theory in the sense that people get together in smoke-filled rooms and say, how are we going to go about it today? It's not even a conspiracy. They're openly talking about it. But and so to call that genocide, I think, as again, technically it may be accurate, but I don't think that helps our cause because most people think of genocide as what happened with the Tutsi and the Hutu in Rwanda.
Right.
People slashing at each other with machetes or hauling people off in trucks and shooting them. That's not happening to us yet. So I don't believe it's helpful to talk about white genocide.
Right. No, it's a definition thing, essentially. What terms do you use to describe it? The effects, of course, are the same, and at the end of it. Although you do have, and again, when I say conspiracy, I kind of mean it that not necessarily that it's taking place in smoke-filled rooms and, you know, things like this, but it's a discussion that political activists have, and it's a political active group and far-left groups and things like that for example, right, to take the SPLC thing, Mark Potok, it was discovered that he had this little chart on his wall there, which talked about the declining population in the U.S. He had one about Europe as well. But they're showing from 1920s, right, 90% of the population was white, and then 2015, at about 62%. This is mapping and tracing something, but supposedly for a purpose, for a reason, right? They're liking that it's going in this direction.
Oh, I think he thinks it's just fine. Yes, yes. There are many non-whites who think this is just fine. The shocking thing is that there are so many whites who are bamboozled or intimidated into thinking that this is just fine. It's a kind of self-destructive insanity that it is impossible to imagine any other racial group subjecting itself to. It's impossible to imagine Mexicans or Indians or Japanese saying, yeah, we're on the way out, and that's just great. Nobody could bamboozle those people, any non-white group, into taking that attitude.
Yep, that's right. Absolutely right. Now, why don't we do this? We could talk about this as an example, of course, of treatment in the media, too. And this is helping to create this kind of perception that we're talking about regarding the fact that white people are white people bad, right? That's kind of thing. Ahmed Arbery was a very interesting case, because we have a couple of other cases to compare to as well. And we can look at the difference between these. But this was, of course, a scenario where Two white guys in Georgia presumably sick and tired of the fact that there was a new construction site that was being, this is how I understand the situation. There were thefts happening in this one construction site, and this particular gentleman here, Ahmed Arbery, had visited this site many times. Now it turned out that they were following him, essentially, I believe. And then the footage was released, where they ended up shooting him. And I think it was because he tried to grab the gun. He was going for the gun, etc. And, you know, he fired off, but they've been charged with murder. That somehow the perception and the message or the view that was given out in the media was that these two white guys were intentionally out just looking for somebody that was black that they could shoot. That's essentially what the media tried to argue. What would you like to talk about regarding this situation, this case?
Well, who was it? Who's that? The professional basketball player. I can't remember which one of the most famous of them all.
Kobe Bryant, yes, I think it was.
Kobe Bryant. Yeah. Kobe Bryant was saying that we can't even go for a jog, and they hunt us down like dogs. It was an absolutely idiotic thing to say. And yet, before we condemn Kobe Bryant, we have to condemn Joe Biden. He called this a lynching. He called this a killing in cold blood. Whereas even if all you saw was the video, and I'm sure you've seen it, I'm sure you've shown it to your viewers, there is a struggle for a gun, and that is when the gun goes off. If those two white guys had wanted to shoot a black guy, they could have shot him long before the black guy actually came up and grabbed a gun. And if you're going to go out and shoot somebody, you don't call 911 first. The idea that this was a cold-blooded killing is so preposterous, so crazy. The idea that Joe Biden isn't laughed right out of his basement for having said such an idiotic thing goes to show you how utterly, utterly fooled and biased the United States is, both its media and its political class. And I think one of the best analyses of what happened was written up by one of the prosecutors who later accused himself. You've probably gone over this with your viewers as well, but George Barnhill's report. He saw the autopsy report. He interviewed the witnesses. He was there on the scene. And as he said, those two men, they were carrying weapons legally. They were trying to make a citizen's arrest, which is legal in the state of Georgia. And at the time they attempted to do this, they were shouting to Arbery, stop, we want to talk to you. As I say, if they'd wanted to shoot him, they could have shot him any time. Stop, we want to talk to you. Arbery doesn't stop. Instead, he actually runs up to a guy who's holding a shotgun and grabs it. The very first wound he had was in his right palm. He's a right-handed guy. Clearly, he's reaching for the barrel of a shotgun. Under those circumstances, you're going to get shot. It doesn't make any difference what race you are. And as George Barnhill said, this may be a regrettable event, but if you see a guy coming at you, trying to grab your weapon away from you, what's he going to do with it once he's got it? This is legitimate self-defense. Another point that Barnhill made is that if, in fact, he was pulling on the weapon, it may have been Ahmad Arbery himself who caused it to go off. It's clear that it was Travis McMichael's finger on the trigger. But if somebody's holding a gun at you and you pull it, you try to jerk it away from him, it's going to go off. So he said, look, he said, we're going to leave it to the grand jury. We're not going to arrest these guys, but a grand jury will have to decide if we're going to make an indictment. That, to me, is an extremely reasonable analysis of the case. Now, Barnhill is being portrayed as this good old boy, white racist. He's a very experienced prosecutor. He's seen hundreds of homicides, hundreds of shootings, and it seems to me that his analysis is correct. Now, at the very least, this will go to trial, and it seems to me that the people who are defending the McMichaels on this case, they are not some penny ante public defender losers. They've got some pretty high-powered hotshot lawyers. And so I don't rule out the possibility that we end up with something like what happened in the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. We could get an acquittal when all the facts are brought together. A jury, and I believe it still takes a majority to acquit, we could at least get a hung jury. We might even get an acquittal. So we'll see. Yes, here it is on the screen. They're struggling. And, it's like Michael Brown going after a cop's gun. What does it take for someone to charge an armed man? There's some kind of complete craziness going on there. But this is the sort of recklessness that we often find from blacks.
Now, there was even the guy filming it was charged with murder. I forget his name.
Roddy, William something, and he's known as Roddy. I've forgotten his last name. The other thing that is fascinating to me about this is that this video was released by a family friend, or at least an acquaintance, of the McMichaels. And he released it with the expectation this is going to clear the air.
Yeah.
Now okay. He's saying, well, it wasn't necessarily to acquit them. It wasn't necessarily to condemn them, just to get the facts out. Well, the video that you just showed, I don't see how anyone can call it a killing in cold blood. How can anyone call it that? And it's like the Japanese movie Rashomon, in which it's all based on one event that takes place, and you see it through the eyes of different people, and it's interpreted in so many different interesting ways. This is a perfect Rashomon. And your politics, I suspect, can be defined almost perfectly by how you see this video. Is this a cold-blooded killing? Is this a lynching? Or is this something that could very well be legitimate self-defense? It would be very interesting to show that film to a group of selected people and then just test their politics. And it just goes to show you the extent to which people see what they hope to see.
Yes, and of course, footage came out here of apparently he's visited these sites many times, right? He was 10-12 miles away from home, but the media said in his neighborhood, and he was just out jogging. And a lot of memes and jokes have kind of come out of this in the wake of this. But regardless, it's this idea that, and I showed them here. I accidentally pulled these up. I wanted to pull the main video out, but I forgot that I had these up here from previously. That 2017, he was involved in a shoplifting thing at a Walmart, I think. There was another run-in he had with police. I forget. He was not this model citizen, I guess.
I had heard that he was trying to steal a 72-inch television set.
Right, yeah.
And good grief.
65.
How do you go about with 65, I beg
your pardon. That matters.
Yes,
highly.
Yes, yes. How on earth do you try to walk out of a store with something that size? It just goes to show you what a reckless guy this is. And also, as I'm sure you know, he was arrested for carrying a firearm illegally into a high school basketball game. And he was discovered, and he ran away, and he resisted arrest, and an officer was injured. This guy didn't go to jail for that. He got on probation. And while he was on probation, he stole this television set. It's not as though this guy has been a model character, but at the same time, he is not one that society has treated harshly. Society has treated him rather leniently, given what he did. But the idea that black people go out jogging and they have to be careful or they'll be shot down. This is just preposterous. But the mainstream media report this sort of thing as if it's actually the case.
Yeah, and of course that aids in this is it an anti-white environment which is created, and this is how white people behave, and kind of you have to watch your back and stuff like that. But then again, if you look at the statistics, it's actually should be the other way around, right? if you look at the crime statistics.
Well, certainly, and well, once again, I was just looking at the statistics for what happened over the weekend in Chicago. I think, despite the fact that Chicago still has the state of Illinois supposed to have social distancing rules, there were 9 people shot and killed and 27 were wounded in, the gunplay over the weekend. Now, 9 people dead. 9 times as many as were killed in this one incident. But do black lives really matter? Only when a white person kills them. Only. It doesn't seem to make any difference what the circumstances are. If a black person is killed by a white man, oh my gosh, his life is so valuable that you have people demonstrating all over the country, running 2.23 miles because he was shot on February 23rd. All of this insane stuff to celebrate this guy. But 9 people shot over the weekend in Chicago alone, all blacks, all shot by blacks. Ho hum. Who cares? Business as usual. So long as black people pull the trigger, black lives really don't matter. It's only when a white man is involved and only when you can impute racism, that's suddenly when black lives matter to the point that the whole country gets involved.
It's when it can be used as a weapon, as a sledgehammer, or as some people said, a hammer and a sickle against white society.
That's very good.
I heard that a while back, and so I'm taking that one. Used against white society, the Western world overall, because these cases we see, in other European countries now as well. It's only then that they raise this level of concern, and it's phony, it's fraudulent, it's fake virtue signaling just because they can use it against us. It's pretty sick, actually.
And the horror of it is that it's many whites who go along with this. In the case of the Arbery business, I was as disgusted as anything by the number of so-called conservatives who were coming down on these two as if they were practically a lynch mob themselves. David French writing in the National Review, and a couple of other so-called conservatives. Conservatives love an opportunity to jump up and down and scream about racism, because even in their milquetoast dissents from the racial preferences that govern this country, they themselves can be accused of racism. So they love to have a chance to spit on the behavior of lower class whites or people that they can claim are racism, as if they think that that's going to deflect accusations of racism against them. It doesn't work, boys. It doesn't work. And how they are so stupid as to not realize this. The whole thing is really sickening.
Yeah, I mean, they are, most of them, they just cannot, can't take the side of white people, of themselves, and see the insincerity of how, these cases are treated in the media, and they try to back down, and they think they can appease people by continually backing down, essentially, and that's not working. It's not going to work, and as their kids and all of our kids who are white, becomes a minority. In most of the Western world, we will be treated in the most ruthless, horrific, despicable way imaginable. I'm sad to say.
Again, it makes you wonder, just like the people who talk about universal white privilege, do they really believe that Skid Row bum has white privilege? Now, do these so-called conservatives, do they really think that they can build a colorblind America that with just the right treatment for minorities and sticking up for America, they're really going to have this happy, idyllic America in which you all hold hands? How can they be so naive? How can they not realize that they are going to be the targets? How can they not realize that everything that they profess to love about the United States comes from European culture and is dependent and is defended and promoted by Europeans. And as we dwindle away and as we get are encouraged to go away by the people who despise us, do they really think that those things are going to survive? How can they believe this? I would love to have National Review types over for a couple of drinks, see what they really and truly believe.
Yeah, interesting take on that. Why don't we move on and talk about this case a little bit? We're going to wrap up here in a little bit, but we had another scenario. And I didn't go out of my way of searching in many of the big kind of mainstream media outlets to see how they covered this, if they covered it. Did you have a good idea of this case out of the nursing home in Detroit, was it? Or?
Well, you know, this is a very interesting thing. When it first came out on Twitter, it got so much traffic. I thought to myself, this is going to be a real dilemma for the mainstream media. If they don't talk about this at all, then it's just going to make so clear the extent to which they slant the news in terms of what they cover, what they don't cover. And I thought there was maybe a 50-50 chance that they would cover it, they would not. The New York Times actually did write a little article about it. But, of course, they left out the racial angle.
Yeah, now so, it doesn't matter. Now that's irrelevant.
That's irrelevant. Yeah. Completely irrelevant. So they could say, oh, yeah, we covered it. But no, they didn't talk about race. I believe it was CNN and some other outlet. They did not mention race in the text, but they showed a still. And in those cases, they had pixelated out the faces. But if you looked carefully, you could see that we've got a black guy and he's pounding away at a white guy. So the photographic evidence was there.
An old, white, helpless guy, also, which is it.
Yes.
For the podcast audience
who
don't see the actual video here we're playing.
75 years old, in a nursing home. Now, there are a number of astonishing things about this. This young black guy had been diagnosed with the virus, COVID-19. And he had been sent to this nursing home for reasons that I've yet to fathom in order to recuperate. He was sharing a room with this guy. These two were roommates. And as he is pounding him, he's saying something about, get out of my bed. It's perhaps that this disoriented white guy ended up lying down in his bed. All of these details are murky, but these are probably things we will not really find out about because this has disappeared from the front pages. And even if it does go to trial, this will not get anything like the attention of the Arbery case. Now, the contrast here is so remarkable. What you have in the McMichael's confrontation with this fellow Ahmaud Arbery is one in which there is a real debate. People who are not utterly blinded by anti-white prejudice realize there is a question, who is right and who is wrong. You might say that it was unwise for those guys to grab weapons and go after Ahmaud Arbery, but it is obviously not a cold-blooded lynching. Now, in the case of the tape of what's going on in the nursing home, there's no question as to who's to right and who's wrong. Even if this guy did lie down in the black guy's bed, nothing justifies the kind of pounding he's administering to a helpless white guy. So if there's going to be outrage expressed about something that happened in the United States along racial lines, if you will, which is the more legitimate focus of outrage? Well, what happened in that Detroit nursing home was a focus of intense outrage only on Twitter, only on social media. There was not a hint of outrage in the coverage in the mainstream media, limited as it was. It simply described, this is what happened. And again, in the text, in the description of these events, nothing about race. That's simply an irrelevant fact. Race, the guy happened to be black, and the person he's treating like a punching bag happened to be white, except they didn't even mention that. That's what we're just supposed to assume.
Yeah, and there are multiple videos, too. So presumably he has gone and set up his phone over here, and like, is the end good? And yeah, okay, I can see it. And then goes over and just punches these people. It's not a one-off, you know, this is it's despicable, right? But you always, it almost kind of becomes cringy, but it needs to be repeated that, like, imagine the rules were reversed on something like this, right?
Yes. And it is, in fact, almost impossible to imagine rules reversed. I'd like to, I mean, surely in the annals of world history, you can find white people who've done things as despicable as this.
Sure, of course.
But it's very, very hard to find them. And this guy not only took a video of himself, apparently posted it himself. And this is an indictment of the nursing home, too. They apparently never discovered the condition that this poor white guy was in. He had blood streaming down his forehead. But they didn't find out about it until this video was posted, and all the Twitter users were outraged about it. So there you go. But here we have, it's a tale of two videos. Which video has provoked outrage, and which video is, nothing to see here, move along.
Yeah, I know.
This tells us an enormous amount about the state of sickness of the United States of America.
So race is used as a sledgehammer when it can be used against white people. When it's the roles are reversed, then it's like, what has race got to do with it? It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do
with
it.
Right.
And that's always the treatment. And and that's also the proof that we live in a world in the West that's by default anti-white, and it's become sanctioned and acceptable to continuously push things which takes us in that direction of an anti-white narrative, essentially, right?
But don't forget, you benefit from white privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Every breath you take, every step you take is an expression of white privilege. From the day you were born, you were just lathered with benefits because of white privilege.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't poor growing up in Sweden. I were handed things to me all the time. I didn't build anything myself. And, you know, it's always, so you're living in this system. So this is seen it's equity, right? That's what they call it. Not equality. It's equity. If someone is up here, they need to be brought down. The way you do it is, as the famous saying, I guess it was some talented ballet dancer or something like that, right? And it was a girl who was less talented. And then the answer was to break the legs of the talented ballet dancer to make sure that everyone is equal. And it's always the lowest common denominator. It's actually not about lifting other people up. It's always about lowering those who have excelled. Those that have kind of, shown through or done something remarkable, they need to be taken down, right?
Yes, of course. Another thing that amuses me about the idea of white privilege and the idea that American society is steeped in white supremacy and the decks are all stacked in favor of us, there are half a dozen different Asian ethnic groups that have higher household incomes than whites. Lebanese Americans, Filipino Americans. Did you know that? Filipino Americans make more money than whites. Chinese, Japanese, Taiwanese, of course they make more money. Indian Americans make more than all. But again, Iranian Americans, Lebanese, Indonesian Americans, they make more money than white Americans. Where's white supremacy when we really need it? Where's our privilege when we really want it?
Yeah, then it's nowhere to be seen. We can finish on this story. I don't know if you saw it, but it was a 19-year-old guy in Sweden, a teenager, Tommy Lind. He was trying to stop the rape of a girl. She was 14 years old. It was the second time that she was being raped by an African migrant. I forget if it was Sudan he was from. Sudanese. The father. So what happened after this is he did something. He tried to step in. He tried to stop the situation, divert it, stop this African migrant from continuing to raping this girl. And he was stabbed to this, right? And the way that the Swedish media treated this was to turn it against Tommy and even his family. And Nazi accusations arose in the wake of this, because this was a case that they climbed to prominence, if you will, within Sweden. A lot of angry people. There were a lot of rallies in support of Tommy Lind and to remember his memory and the fact that he tried to do something. He tried to stop this person, right? It's a heroic act. So here's the article. Father of Swedish man killed by migrant forced by media to defend his son's dead son from Nazi smears. Because after this, you had... you know, people from across the political spectrum, but even like, you know, the Nordic Resistance Movement and a lot of these other groups, they did, what do you call it, a manifestation, or what do you call it in English?
A demonstration,
a rally in support of Tommy and stuff like that. And so the mainstream immediately shifted the blame and said, actually, it's not about this Sudanese migrant or the fact that he has raped this girl or the fact that he stabbed Tommy Lind to death. No, let's bring up the Nazi card, right? And this is how they do it. Amazing.
Of course. Yeah. Yes, yes. Well, I am delighted, though, that there's at least been some sentiment of support for this Tommy. I had never heard of this case, I'm sorry to say. But I'm sure there are incidents like this all around Europe, all around the United States. Just remain local news, and we never hear about them.
Yeah.
This the attack in the Detroit nursing home, that would never have gone anywhere if this guy hadn't actually filmed it himself.
That's right.
So
yeah. All right. Well, it's absolutely horrible. And this is, of course, why we talk about the things that we do, right? Because these are now the environments. These things, I don't know how much you've kept up with this. I'm not going to go through all of this here towards right at the end here. But, I did a show a while back where I detailed there's a new phenomenon specifically in Sweden, but it is happening in other countries too. Holland, we've seen it. Norway, we've seen it. I think the UK too, where often a young, in this case, a Swedish male, a teenager is kidnapped by usually two or more migrants who are part of usually some kind of criminal gang or something like that. It seems to be some kind of initiation ritual. They rob them, they undress them, they film all this, of course. They beat them, they urinate on them, and even in some cases. It was one case when it was very also came to mainstream media attention, which was good. It was a shocking case where they urinated on a young Swedish boy. And they're doing this as kind of an initiation ritual, I would assume, into these criminal gangs that you have to grab a Swedish kid and do this to them, and they laugh at this. This is funny to them. They're you can hear in the videos, and I did a 2.5-hour stream about two months ago now, where I showed a lot of these videos that have been coming out just in the last 6 months or so. And this is the environment that we are now asking our children, our teenagers to grow up in, right? This hostile environment where they are hated and resented, and these people do not care one bit about this. In fact, they think it's funny when they're doing it to us.
Again, this has gotten so little coverage in the United States that I was unaware of this. There was an incident some time ago, a couple of years ago, I believe it was in Detroit, where a group of blacks had, this is around the time of the election of Donald Trump, they kidnapped a white guy and mistreated him and humiliated him. But this caused quite a stir. But no, I hadn't heard about this happening in Europe. I'm not at all surprised. They see weakness, and instead of having pity, that makes them even more cruel. It gives them every desire to humiliate us even more. My heart goes out to these poor white kids. They'll never be the same.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know what's going to happen? If they ever show any kind of resentment towards the kind of people who did this, they'll be considered racists. They'll be the ones who are overreacting, that they shouldn't hold us against this, the community as a whole. They're going to be the ones who are at fault if they ever say ever anything in their lives that does not describe the races as one big happy family and that multiculturalism is a wonderful thing. This will be held against them for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, this is something that we need to look into. I was unaware of this horrible stuff. It doesn't surprise me one bit, though.
No, it's become so common, in fact, that there's becoming discussions now. But again, nothing is obviously being done by this. It's I remember when I covered the case where there were this young man who was urinated on, and they filmed this and they laughed at it and stuff like that. The discussion by police that talked about it, they were on TV talking about it. There was other kind of psychologists that were there. It was essentially, well, these parents, they're sitting on their phones and they don't pay attention to these kids. And that's what's to blame. And there's never any like, well, wait a minute. There's this anti-Swedish, anti-white narrative in the media that's also like shifting blame onto them, that somehow it's all their fault, right? Something I do think though is shifting in this regard and I hate to kind of go there, but in a way it's almost like it's forcing us to toughen up to the situation, right? And those who will not make it, they will break, and they will not, you know what I mean? It's hard, but that's what it is, right?
Well,
what do we do?
Well, Henrik, let us hope that it forces white people to react in some kind of self-defensive but vigorous way.
Right, yeah.
So far, white people have submitted to an astonishing level of humiliation without rising up in any kind of coordinated way. All you get are individual reactions, often of the most counterproductive kind, like Branton Tarrant in Christchurch, like Dylan Roof in Charleston, South Carolina. These are, I by no means do I wish to justify actions of that kind at all. But when your group is constantly being humiliated. There are some unhinged characters who are going to explode in very, very dangerous ways. The left seems to have absolutely no idea of this. Or if they do have an idea of this, perhaps they welcome it because it's yet another excuse to clamp down on white people as a whole. If you can provoke one insane white person to go on a shooting rampage, then that justifies your story about how every last one of us is evil and essentially deserves to be shoved off the planet.
Yeah, I mean, it's used to handcuff us in terms of the actions that we can take consequently, and that's being used as the motivation of why we in fact need to be monitored more. We need to have our speech limited more because otherwise these things will continue to happen and blah blah blah, all this kind of thing. Meanwhile, of course, they deny looking at the violence from the other side that sparked, as you say, these reactions, which is not reactions that we approve of. In fact, we disavow them for that reason, because it's used against us to be able to organize in a peaceful way to make sure that we stop these kinds of things from happening, creating community, disassociating at least initially from these kinds of these groups and stuff like that. It's very hard.
One of the points that I frequently make is that people who have a voice speak. But people whose voices have been taken away from them are likely to act in all sorts of surprising and sometimes brutal and violent ways. And the more white people who are speaking as white people are smothered and muzzled, I think it's inevitable you're going to find more and more of them that will crack. And they will crack in very destructive and horrible ways. And no one will understand the real reason why they did so. It'll be shown as proof of, yes, white people are all inherently this way, and we will write to muzzle them, and we must muzzle them even more. We must take away all their symbols. We must make sure that white people, especially young white men, never have white heroes, that they are a contemptible breed that really are the cancer of human history, as Sontag said. And the more this is forced on white men, there are going to be some who just can't take it anymore. And the left will never understand that.
Yeah, exactly. That's absolutely right. All right, Jared, it was great having you back. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Why don't we leave with you plugging some of your stuff. Give us the website, the YouTube channel. You guys are still luckily on YouTube. I'm glad you're still there.
What happened to you was absolutely horrible. And I don't know why you got the axe. I guess I know. You were more effective than we were. You got the axe. But no, yes. What happened to you, it's just despicable and horrible. Yes, we still have a YouTube channel, believe it or not. We have a podcast channel, and we are at American Renaissance. Well, it's right there up on the screen now. And, of course, our webpage is amren.com. Well, Henrik, you are one of the best interviewers in the business. It's always a pleasure to be on your program. You ask penetrating questions, and you have so many ideas of your own. You really are a model for us all.
Thank you, Jared. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your kind words. And again, thank you for stopping by here with us today. Great seeing you again. Keep up the good work and hope to have you back soon.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure and an honor.
Well, there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Jared Taylor, thanks so much for watching today. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back with much more Wednesday. No Go Zone coming up live at 5 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Central European time, of course, on DLive, but also on VK, on Twitter, on redice.tv/live as well. Definitely catch that live. If you can, of course, it'll be uploaded later on in the archives, BitChute, Library, VK, Replay on DLive, a number of other places beyond, of course, redice.tv and redice members. .com. You want to support us, help us out, check out our memberships, redicemembers.com. Allows us to continue doing the show and continue to expand despite the fact that the majority of the hostile organizations out there are trying to get us shut down, banned, censored, kicked us off of payment processors and services. It is quite an uphill battle. But of course, with your help, we can continue doing this. So thank you so much for the support. Really appreciate it. See you guys later. Take care.